I'll just talk a little bit, because we'd like to also end a little bit early today, because the homeless are coming in at 9 o'clock, and so we'd like to kind of be out of here so that they're not kept out in the cold while we're kind of lingering too much. In the suttas, there's a story of a monk who was fully enlightened. He was an arhat. And this monk, one day, had to cross a river, a shallow river. They had to cross a shallow river, walk across it. And so he yanked up his robes that Buddhist monks wear and pranced across the river, kind of a little bit wildly, kind of just dashing and, you know, without much dignity. And other monks saw it, and they thought this was inappropriate behavior for a dignified monk. And how could he be enlightened, fully enlightened, to be so, you know, awkward or something, you know, something silly as he crossed the river or whatever. And so they went to the Buddha to just complain, you know, or say something, what's going on here? And so the Buddha said, oh, don't worry about this. He is, in fact, fully enlightened. But for a number of his former lifetimes, he was a monkey. And it's in his nature. He's kind of this little monkey nature in there still is in there. And that's the way he behaves. You know, what do you expect, you know? And when I first came to the San Francisco Zen Center, one of the first Zen teachers that I encountered there was Ed Brown, who's come here, spoken to here sometimes. And I was very impressed by him and very inspired by him. And it was seemed, you know, being very young and not knowing much about Zen or spirituality, I assumed that the point of Zen practice was to become just like Ed Brown. And then the problem was that I then left Zen Center. You know, I visited for a couple of weeks, then I went away for 2 years. And I carried with me this idea for 2 years that I was supposed to be like Ed Brown. You know, and this is what, I knew I wasn't. So it wasn't like I was trying to make myself like him. But I thought Zen practice was going to lead me to become like him. So I wasn't burdened by the idea. And then 2 years later, I went back to the San Francisco Zen Center. And I met some of the other senior priests there. I remember there was one who was sitting, it's kind of a classic story, where he was having, I think it was Philip Whalen. Some of you might know the poet. And I think he was sitting having his breakfast, some Cheerios or something. And he was there kind of leaning over the table and a little bit slouch, kind of not a very good Zen posture, you know, he's kind of, maybe his elbow was on the table, he's kind of like, you know. But not only was he going like this, but he was reading the newspaper at the same time. And this is not like Ed Brown. And then I realized very quickly the point of Zen practice was not to become like Ed Brown. The point of Zen practice was to become yourself. Now, and what is it to be yourself? And how are the ways in which you're not willing to be yourself? What are the ways in which you hold you inhibit yourself, hold yourself back? Jack Kornfield is of the opinion that in his having surveyed and met many people who've done a lot of spiritual practice, are very, very spiritually mature and enlightened in different traditions and all that, he says something like, the one thing that they seem to have in common is that they all seem to be eccentric. Something about the process of spiritual maturation that lets people be more themselves rather than less themselves. Even though in Buddhism we talk about becoming selfless sometimes, having no self. But being no self doesn't mean that your personality disappears. It means that the kind of concern with defending itself, building itself, constructing itself, that gets in the way of your personality is fallen away. So there's less inhibition to your personality. And so there's greater freedom just to kind of be how you are. You're less concerned about whether people think you're acting like a monkey or not. Or it's okay to be silly. It's okay to be serious. It's okay to be studious. It's okay to be, you know, there's so many different ways of being a human being. And everyone is unique in their own way. And can that uniqueness live in your life freely? Or are there ways in which you inhibit and hold it back? Or don't allow it, or don't give it expression? When I first started doing Zen meditation, I started sitting every day, twice a day, for 40 minutes a time. So it was a lot of sitting as a new student. I sat 6 days a week. I figured Sundays you took a day off. And I was very happy doing my practice. When I first started doing the practice, I had a lot of reasons for doing it. And after some months of doing it, all the reasons fell away. But I kept doing it. And it felt very strange to me that I kept doing it, because I was a person who had reasons for everything I did. And here I was doing something like, and something, I mean, a lot of time every day. It was a big commitment and involvement, and I kept doing it, and I didn't have any obvious reason for it. And so I spent a lot of time reflecting or trying to discover, why was I continuing to do this meditation? What I found, or the answer that came to me, the best answer that came up to me, was that the meditation was the cleanest or most direct way I had discovered for expressing myself. It was a form of self-expression. Even though it doesn't look like that, you're just sitting there quietly, you know, not moving. I wasn't moving physically, I wasn't moving verbally, but I was letting go of all the inhibitions, all the fears, all the desires, and all the kind of things that got in the way of some more natural flow of personality, some more inherent flow of personality to just come through me, just to be who I was without. And I was very lucky in a sense, even though I had this Ed Brown kind of fixation. I was very lucky in my early days of Zen practice that I had no idea what was supposed to happen in Zen practice. I mean, during meditation. And I didn't know anything about getting concentrated, for example. I just thought you were supposed to sit there and just let things be, you know, as they were. It wasn't like, so I had no idea that what was happening, and that anything that was happening was not supposed to be happening. I had no idea of censoring or stopping. It was just like, let me try to fully be here for what's here. And I wasn't very good at it, but I didn't know you're supposed to be good at it. So that was very lucky, and kind of beginner's luck. So very quickly I discovered this kind of freedom of leaving myself alone in meditation. And this is one of the great gifts that meditation can bring you, the gift of learning how to leave yourself alone. And just let what's there be there and flow through you. Let your emotions flow through you. You can have the most saintly emotions, angelic emotions, and the most satanic when you sit and meditate, and it's completely okay. It's like maybe the only place in your life where you can, it's okay to have these things and let them course through you without inhibition, because you're sitting still. Letting them just flow through you. So what is it? What is it to free who you are, to become free? What is it that you hold back from? Are you afraid of saying things to certain people or acting certain ways because it doesn't put you in a good light? Because then you're afraid people will reject you or not like you? Are you afraid of being a certain way in life because people have rejected you in the past because of it? So what's required then is a development of inner courage and inner strength to become stronger than needing to have people like you. It was very liberating for me when I was at this kitchen at Tassajara. I was a kitchen manager. And it's one of the most lightning rod jobs at the Zen monastery, because no one on the crew likes the manager. And because it's a lot of work to be done, it's very intense, like a pressure cooker kind of environment. And the manager has to make sure all the work gets done. And I told one person to please cut the cucumbers a little bit smaller, just because I had to fit into these small Zen bowls. And she burst into tears. because of the kind of pressure cooker place it is. And I told her. What I realized after a while was how burdened I was in this role of wanting everyone to like me. And I was constantly kind of contorting myself in ways and saying things certain ways or trying to be so that make sure everyone liked me in the kitchen. And when I finally noticed that and how what a burden it was and overcame the need to have everyone in the kitchen like me, well, then people liked me. it became much better for me, you know, because I just took care of business. So sometimes becoming ourselves requires a lot of courage, because sometimes we are weird, and people don't like it. I mean, it isn't like being yourself means that, you know, that you could become like this wonderful, perfect, you know, that who you are is the innate, you know, perfect spiritual person. I mean, some of you guys are weird. I mean, if Jack Kornfield's right, all of you are. I'm weird. I'm really an odd person. I mean, I'm really an odd person. So for those of you who are odd, maybe not all of you are, but those of you who are odd, I mean, if you're going to be happy, you have to be happy being odd. If you don't want to be, you know, otherwise you're not going to be happy. So can you be yourself in a wise way? Can you be yourself in a wise way means so you don't hurt anybody or distress anyone, but also so that you don't worry so much about, you know, the kind of things that keep you from being yourself. Can you be strange? Can you be odd? Can you be eccentric? Can you be unique? Can you not stand in your own way? Can you be uninhibited? My hope for all of you is that as you learn to meditate, that the meditation is in part a process of you becoming free to leave yourself alone. And that in learning how to do it in meditation, then you can learn to begin to do it more in your daily life and in life that you live. So, may you all be eccentric. Thank you.